Hi, it's Rich Shea again with...
Rob Kircher again.
Yes, joining a regular podcast. Maybe we'll make this regular more regularly. We're both back from WBC, and last time we said we'd wrapped up talking about being a GM, but that's probably not completely true because we went off and we were GMs, and we should probably talk about things that actually happened. Oh, and here's Rich. Hey, Rich, have a seat.
Hey, Ben.
So, Rich is joining us. Can you hear him, Rob?
Yes, I can.
You'll have to get closer, though, because we're using this microphone, Rich. Try not to spit on it too much.
Hello, Rob.
Hello, Rich. How are we doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm getting ready for the Vintage Championship. That's the big Magic Championship that happens every year for the Vintage Magic format. That's the one where you use all the old powerful cards.
And where are they hosting that this year?
Philly.
Oh, so you're going to be leaving there pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm going to be heading over there Friday.
Excellent.
Rich won't be joining us on Sunday for the game day. Everybody's bailing on me, but not everybody. Rob will make an appearance.
Yes, so, I will be there at some point.
At some point. And actually, a bigger crowd than I thought, because some of Alex's friends are going to be dropping by. Should be cool. This adventure in GMing that we had was totally unplanned. We were at an event, and the GM didn't show up. It was early in the week at WBC, and the GM had some travel problems. And they sent some brave young lady down to try to run the event who had no GMing experience.
And so, she was very brave, having about 50 people looking up at her, trying to figure out what is going on.
So they sent her down with absolutely no experience, and I staged an intervention, took it over. But I couldn't have done it without Rob's help. Well, actually not Rob's help, without Rob's randomizer deck.
That's true.
Because I didn't have one with me.
Just so happened to have been joining that event, and I had my GM kit with me, which I had my randomizer cards with me to save the day.
And it did. Because as soon as we employed a little bit of order, all the chaos went away, and the gamers settled down, and the games happened.
Which is a beautiful thing.
It was a beautiful thing. But that's one of the things that I learned from that, is that if there's no ordering at all, gamers are like herding cats. But you only have to apply a few rules, a little bit of order, and they all catch on quickly, and everything was fine in very short order.
Well, it also helps with a crowd that's experienced and well-trained, so they can follow. Once you start giving directions, they can follow them.
It's true, but there was a lot of, like, grumbling at first because they didn't like the first set of directions they were given.
Well, the first set of directions were bad. We were told to just sit down at a table with people to play the game. I shouted out, this is a terrible way to run an event.
Especially during the daytime, the late night party events, different story, that's when you do get together with your friends. But generally a regular event during the day or up to the evening, generally those should be random table seating.
In fact, that actually was an issue later on for Richie, when there was some not exactly random seating.
No, this was in the semifinals of...
We can leave out the exact event name, so nobody's embarrassed, but go ahead.
All right. This is at the semifinals of an event that I suppose we won't be named, so we don't embarrass anyone. The GM announced explicitly that tables would be randomly assigned. And she randomly assigned tables. Suddenly, someone said, hey, I'm at the table with my teammate. And then another person quickly said, oh, I'll switch with you, thereby going to a different table. So in this way, one person basically got to pick tables. When I pointed this out to the GM, that she should not allow this, she said that she was going to continue, and I said, if you do continue, you should at least completely randomize everything, because otherwise you're just letting someone, you know, switch tables. But, no, she insisted that things play out that way.
Well, it might have been a hassle to re-randomize completely, but possibly randomizing which table that the swap should have occurred from.
That would have been better than what happened. But she had already announced completely random tables. So she had already gone against what she said by allowing this. She used the absolutely stultifying logic of, well, they want to do this and you don't want them to do this. As though this were some sort of democratic thing about who gets to be at what table. That's not at all correct.
Which is far from what usually happens in such situations, because usually the GM will opt to whichever option resolves the situation the quickest without it involving much effort.
And that's exactly what she did. She did nothing and allowed the swapped tables to stand.
So, that wasn't optimal. I actually had to do a thing like that where two teammates were at a semifinal table together, potentially. And I didn't want that to happen, but I'd been warned ahead of time. So we basically just had them draw the first two cards, and we would have kept drawing until they were different tables, and then everybody else drew their cards.
So what's different about that model is that it doesn't let someone say, oh, that looks like a weak table, let me go there for this game.
It's always a concern. It's hard to have a bad opinion of other gamers or worry about that. In my opinion, the best thing to do is just don't worry about it. Follow the rules. Randomize. If you have a set of rules, do it explicitly that way, and it's less of an issue.
Yeah, the whole point of good rules is that they avoid things like this. Part of what happened was an abrogation of the rules.
Right.
Yeah, and there's also not a clear every game follows the same concept on how to deal with teammates. And this only applies to the WBC because they do have a team competition that if you're playing with a teammate, but it's supposed to be if you're playing your teammate in the team in that particular game. If it's not your teammate's game that he had chosen, you should be able to play with each other.
Yeah, you really have to make it explicit and about what you're going to do. And certainly a point I'll be doing in the future where I make sure that it's only teammates playing a team game that are going to be separated. And sadly, if you drove 500 miles and you end up at a table with one of your usual gaming buddies, that's just the way it's probably going to have to be.
And but that happens, and that's understandable in the heats or preliminary rounds, that most of the times the GMs will accommodate so that way you're not playing against your family member or someone that you game with all the time. Sometimes they'll make exceptions for that. But usually when you start advancing to the semifinal rounds, usually at that point it's the luck of the draw at that point.
Right. I think that random is fair. There's something extremely fair about random. And any deviation from that can give people the chance to game the system.
Speaking on that particular subject, most tournaments actually do randomize. However, there are some, and particularly the Settlers of Catan tournament at the WBC, actually ranks the top 16 in order and actually assigns which table that you sit at.
So are the top four put together or spread apart?
No, they spread apart. So they go 1 to 4. And then they reverse order 5 to 8. So 1 seed and 8 seed will play, and then they'll go again through 9 through 15. So the first board would have players ranked 1, 8, 9, and 16. And then the last board will have 4, 5, and then I think it's 12 and 13, I think is the numbers how they work out.
Well, there's nothing wrong with seeding them that way, as long as there's a system and it's followed.
Correct.
I think that's perfectly fine. I think you run into problems when you let players pick their seats.
So, Rob, you run the fairly casual Santa Fe Rails tournament, and a lot of the players are regulars. That includes me. Do you have any issues this year? Or?
Actually, we did. We had a problem in the semifinals where we were waiting for one of our semifinalists. He was a GM doing his GM duties, and I made an allowance so that way he'd be able to start his game 15 minutes late, and I informed the table. And then we had an incident where one of the players demanded that they started the game immediately, and I told them that just give him another couple minutes. And thankfully the person was just walked in, and everyone was seated, and we got all the games going along, but it was quite an interesting tense two or three moments there when someone was very unhappy with my current ruling.
So difficult.
That stuff can be tough. My tense moment was sometimes there are gamers who shouldn't be sat at the same table or at the same convention or maybe on the same planet, and I had an incident at one table where I had a matchup like that. Well, it was a little bit miserable. I had to make a couple of rulings. I did get to do some rules research. It was fascinating. Mostly it made a less pleasant experience than it could have been. And, you know, I like both of the people involved. I like playing games with both of them. And I had to explain to them later that it's really not the other guy that's the problem. It's that the two of them just, their personalities are not going to mix. And there's not a whole lot that can be done except everybody stay calm and play the game carefully.
And you always will run into that with large groups. Unfortunately, admittedly so, even the most admirable person, of course, might find someone that he won't necessarily get along with. But everyone usually is well-behaved, and usually you don't get into too many shouting matches.
Usually. I ran into an interesting situation. I played two heats of the same events, and the first one I played, it was fun, everyone had a good time, and the second time I played it, a fellow that I had played in the first game with was also in the second heat. The first heat, he had been very calm and cool and was just taking notes and seemed to be enjoying it. The second time, in that second heat, with the same player, he got so frustrated at himself that he just left and didn't finish the game with one turn to go.
Oh, that's a major no-no.
It is, but I also had a rage quit game during the convention, which was very strange. I was playing Agizia, and Shadow and I were in a game, and the guy was, he was mad at himself, not at us. Maybe a little annoyed with us, but not really. He was mostly mad at himself because he made an error, but he couldn't get himself back under control after that. And he actually left the game. We, had to have the GM come over and make a ruling on what we should do. And it's strange because I'd never seen it before. And I don't think Shadow had ever seen it before either. And
I've heard of it, but not, I haven't actually had that happen in any of my games yet.
Looks like we both got to experience that.
Yes, but and I think there was only one other incident of rage quit that I heard of during the convention. Yeah, at WBC, it's really frowned upon.
Extremely frowned upon.
You know, except unless you're playing Through the Ages, which has an explicit you may resign rule. Even that, I don't think they're comfortable with it, but it's in the game.
I believe you can also kind of resign in diplomacy as well.
Oh, yeah, you might be right. Yeah, that's true. Not.
You can just go into civil disorder, which doesn't upset the balance of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Because they've planned for that already, yeah. And both of those are games where you can get into a situation where it really doesn't make sense to continue. And it can be kind of long and boring to sit there with nothing to do but be the victim.
Especially in long games like that. But for most of the Euros that we play, the duration is less than 2 hours.
Yeah, the pain's going to be over soon, so you should just tough it out. I know I did have some pain. In the Isfahan semifinals, the GM was kind enough to send it to where I was running the Puerto Rico semifinals. Unfortunately, the table with the problem called me over, and I forgot about a card play I was going to make, which cost me 5 points, which was the difference between second and fourth in that game. So being the GM was costly in this WBC.
That falls under your multitasking skills.
Yeah, mine aren't good enough. And I thought they were okay.
Didn't
but
you even miss quarterfinals because of that or something?
Oh, no, that was brass. I couldn't go to the brass ones, but I knew that was going to happen. Mm. And Eric Freeman tried to schedule things better, and he did, but it wasn't better enough. So
there's always going to be conflicts. There's no schedule that's going to be 100% perfect with over 160 different events. There's
absolutely
always going to be.
Yeah, I don't worry. I don't feel too bad about it, only a little bit. And then next year, we'll have to see what happens when we're all off to Seven Springs. That'll be, a slightly different experience. We have to hit the road sooner. I can't be doing semifinals and finals on Sunday morning. And
nope, there's going to be some changes to habits. Because not just for us in the Northeast that have to travel a little further, also the games are going to be a little further apart. So GMs next year are going to have to give a little more lead time for people arriving late because everyone's going to be learning a brand new campus.
That's right. There's actually two different building locations for the games, right?
I believe so for next year, yes.
You might actually have to go outside to get from one to the other, right?
Fresh air? How dare they?
Gamers, fresh air, doesn't always mix. probably good for you. Not as hot as Lancaster, we hope.
That's what they promised us, putting us in the mountains.
So while you were there, well, you do a lot of mostly tournaments. Did you get any open gaming in at WBC?
Yes, I did. I actually played 10 open games, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, of 7 different titles.
Wow, that's good. Anything new that you were really excited about?
No, usually at the WBC, I'm not in new game mode. I did play a brand new game called Brewopoly, which is basically Monopoly with a beer theme, which is fun to play late night. But no, I wasn't learning any new games while I was there.
That sounds like it's more fun if you have some actual brews to go along with your brew.
Yes, we were. We were at the bar.
Oh, all right. Okay, that might work out. I actually, Eric Brosius finally got to teach me 1846. That's actually a really good introduction to the 18XX games. One of the things it does, one of the most brutal aspects of learning 18XX games is the private companies at the beginning and the auction for those, which you can destroy yourself by not knowing how to do that right.
Absolutely.
1846 has a draft for those instead of an auction, which minimizes the pain. I mean, Eric's draft was still better than mine, but I ended up with a set of, you know, miners that made some logical sense without having to do the somewhat arcane auctioning before you even start running your railroads. It's it's a shorter game, and even more exciting, GMT is going to P500, 1846.
Ooh, that's fantastic.
I know, I think so. I think it'll be quite popular. If you've ever thought about 18XX games, 1846 is a great way to start, especially if you can get somebody to show it to you, especially somebody as good at teaching as Eric is. So I'm actually looking forward to that and maybe playing some other titles in the series sometime soon now that I know how better. I did pick up new games at WBC, but I haven't had a chance to break them out yet. Voyages of Marco Polo and Kraftwagen, or Wagen. My German's not that good. We might get a chance to try at least one of them on Sunday. They were demoing some games, but I didn't get to as many demos as I usually do. I don't know why that is, but it was true. Isle of Skye was there, which might not be my cup of tea, but it turns out that I have ancestors from the Isle of Skye, so I should probably try playing it sometime. It's apparently about castles and whiskey, so...
And what's wrong with that?
Well, exactly.
Well, that's why we play Glenmore. That has castles, that it has barrels of whiskey. Once again, a win-win.
It's true, yeah, but I guess Isle of Skye doesn't have a little tartan hat. I don't know why, but...
Ah, no chieftain.
Right. Maybe there'll be an expansion with those. Now, what did you play at WBC, Rich? Because you haven't been for a long time.
No, I haven't been for 6 years. 6 years ago, I came in second in Agricola, and this year I couldn't even win a heat. I think everyone else has gotten better, and I've been busy getting worse.
I don't think you got worse. I think you just didn't get better with the Sharks.
I think just like some other games that you play, like Magic, Agricola is definitely a game that you need to be in practice or in form. Because Puerto Rico would be a good example that my play up until about 2 years ago wasn't really up to par to really advance. Because I had taken a couple years off from playing, and it really shows.
It really does take practice.
So I'll have to make him practice playing Euros more. Of course, we also have to show him some games. He's never played brass. Can you believe it? How did I let him go this long without doing that? I don't know. Now, you played Le Havre, but now you think it's not your favorite anymore?
Well, the thing that I kept seeing in Le Havre, and I played a lot of games of Le Havre there and watched a lot, was it seems like getting the cokery is a huge deal. The best strategy seems to be the building that gives you 3, sometimes 4, coal. Because it takes, I think, $2 to use, and it seems like the best strategy, just from watching a bunch of games of this, is...
Yeah, that's the cholera, you're right.
Yeah, getting a bunch of coal, flipping a bunch of coal over, getting a bunch of into coke, getting 1 franc per flipped over card, and then shipping them all at, I think, 5 francs each. And that seems to just trump whatever else I need.
Be more efficient than anything. I certainly have never been able to catch up to that by trying to eat, like, bake croissants or bread or something.
No.
Or smoked fish. That's never going to catch up to the...
That's right.
No, usually I use a whole bunch of the coke there to process my steel.
Right. You can do that too. It's a commodity and also a useful resource, and that's part of what makes it so powerful. Every coke has given you a franc each in the process of creating it. And you can ship it for a lot, and you can also create steel, which you can use to create luxury liners, and...
Or more importantly, build a boat to ship your coke out.
Right.
It's the most flexible resource in the game.
It's extremely flexible, and it seems like getting the building that generates it is so, so backbreaking in the game.
Yeah, that you can seize control of that, and that pretty much gives you a chokehold on the rest of the game. There might be a way around it, but I'm not sure I know what it is.
No, in observing a lot of games, that seems to be the winning strategy. Rob, do you know of anything that trumps that strategy?
I haven't played Le Havre in a tournament setting yet, so I haven't seen that as a exclusive strategy. But generally, whoever does the advanced steel building, which then either you build ships to ship out, usually cattle is a good one, or then they go into luxury liners, are usually good ways to generate the winning score.
In Brass, the Shadow School, and we'll be talking more about the Shadow School of game analysis starting next time. I think that's going to be our thread for a while. We have to talk to you about this more, Rob, on Sunday and later. A strategy in Brass that basically you won a game without building any cotton mills or even developing cotton mills, just dominating all the ports and getting your iron out, and it actually won a game. And possibly that's just because other people didn't try to play that game. I don't think I will ever let anybody get exclusive control of ports again if I can help it.
Which I actually, in the last game I played online, I actually saw someone applying that strategy, and so that is the origin. Is apparently that school, which is very interesting. However, as a side note, that aforementioned player who did try to just dominate the ports, unfortunately did not get all their ports flipped over and did finish dead last in the four-player game I was in.
I think that's the thing. If you do that, you also have to include the threat that you put up cotton mills and flip the ports yourself if other people don't. I don't think it's super easy to run that strategy, but if the other players don't combat it or figure out a way to stop you, and you can get your, you know, you're getting your four-level ports flipped in the first stage, you're going to rack up a lot of points.
It doesn't spend a whole lot of money to do that kind of strategy. However, you're very dependent on having a lot of cheap development being available early in the game, and that's not always the case.
A lot of players will pay a lot for development. I don't like to do that. But there's usually not a lot of cheap development available in games that I play. If there was, I would take it.
Exactly.
On that note, Rich actually had a very interesting conversation with Shadow that I think changed how you view getting ready to play games in tournament settings, right?
Shadow made the very astute observation about what you need to do as the third player and the fourth player in
Puerto Rico,
which I think was really a clever observation and a good observation, and the sort of observation that you can only glean from playing games, and not just playing them, but discussing them after and talking about them. And I think
playing in an analytical mode, not just a play to maximize your play then mode.
And I think all too often we get into the habit of jamming as many games as we can, and I think that's an incorrect notion. And I think what's a much more effective approach would be to play fewer games, but to take the time to analyze all of them and to try to draw as much as you can from them and think about the explicit plays that were made in the game rather than just playing.
So, and I think we want to save that, and especially the example about Puerto Rico, for our next podcast. And Rob, we'll talk about it with you more. I just finished today transcribing the finals for the Puerto Rico final from WBC, and I'll be putting that up. For those of you that ever look at the website for my podcast, I also have been transcribing the finals games for the last couple of WBC Puerto Rico tournaments and putting all the moves online. This year will probably be the most accurate. I did get a video of the entire thing. I was thinking of publishing a video Watching people play Puerto Rico, actually watching people try to decide what move to make next in Puerto Rico, is not exciting. Sadly, I did not record the commentary that I and the Montreal group were generating while we watched the people play. I think that would have added a lot to the video of the game. Next year, maybe, we'll live stream the final. I would love to be able to do that for a tournament and let people watch. Hopefully, a few people might be interested.
That would be fun. The only difficulty is that a lot of times the facilities that we're in won't support the internet speed to handle such a project. And actually, the previous location where the WBC was, you would have to bring in your own T1 connection.
Yeah, there's no way that was going to work. That's true. I think WBC ate up so much of our time and energy. It's been, what, has it been, how long since we've been there? 2 weeks? And I barely recovered. Actually, I got a little cold that I'm just starting to recover from. Hopefully that won't happen as frequently when we get up to Seven Springs.
We are a mere 10 days away from the previous WBC, and we're roughly about 335 or so away till we get to go to Gaming Nirvana once again.
Once again. Well, we have more Gaming Nirvana coming up, Rob. There's TotalCon, and there's EuroQuest before that.
Actually, there's a lot of good conventions coming up in the not-too-distant future.
I think that's about as much as we've got for this episode, but we'll be back soon. We're going to concentrate on how to analyze games with some examples of analysis and key plays. I really think that we can offer you some insights, everybody, some insights into how to look at your gameplay, how to ramp it up, not based on volume of play, but quality of play. I think we might be on to something. So, Rob, we'll be working with you on that, too. And Rich, when he has the time, we'll be back again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening, folks. And
have a good night.
Nighty-night.